Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
Marion and Mahaska County business leaders met with local legislators recently. How does one of our legislators feel the meeting went? Let's go in depth with State Senator Ken Rosenboom of Oskaloosa. Well, Ken, that was a very interesting discussion at the Vermeer Pavilion with the chambers from Knoxville and from Pella. What are you taking away from this?
Well, you're right. It's a very interesting exchange. It's a great group of people. As Representative Vanderlinden said, it's the one forum maybe the year that, not in numbers, but in quality of people that we have here in terms of the professional part of this is unique. And what I mean by that is business leaders, chambers of commerce, city leaders, education leaders. It's just a good place to dialogue with our voters, and we had a lively dialogue this morning, I thought.
It was very, very good. Do you think that you're going back to Des Moines a little more knowledgeable about some of the issues?
Yes, you learn every day. You simply do. And today we talked only briefly about Medicaid expansion, but you learn a few more pieces of that, I think. You need affirmation as a legislator on what is important to the folks here, and of course this is largely a business group, but they're the employers of the area and the employers of the state, so their input's invaluable. And we had a little discussion on property tax, which kind of affirmed for me my view on the matter. So that type of thing is very helpful.
The general consensus was that there's problems with the structure of property taxes in the state.
Yes. Right? Yeah, that's correct. I think the governor's recognized that, and he's talked loudly about it the last couple of years. And now, as I've spent more time talking to people and learning about it, I would agree with the governor that our commercial property taxes is excessive, and it's probably hurting the state in terms of business climate.
So what do you think should be done?
Well, you know, the governor's plan, which was revised some from last year, is to set a target of an 80% or 20% reduction in commercial property tax over a four-year period, I think it is, and to hold the local government, cities and councils, cities and counties, harmless because the state will backfill whatever revenue is, tax revenue is lost to those local governments. And I don't like the state spending more money, but we have to have a business climate that works for folks so that we attract business. And I think it's just a thing we have to do. The other part of that is to, cut the overall growth in property tax of all classes, industrial, commercial, residential, and ag, to a more modest growth curve than they're on right now.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with State Senator Ken Rosenboom of Oskaloosa. But we also heard calls for more investment in infrastructure.
Right.
And there was a discussion, brief discussion, about the gas tax. Nobody wants higher taxes, but everybody wants the infrastructure. How do you balance that?
Well, I think in my mind, that discussion on gas tax has to be had, but it has to be had in the greater context of the overall tax burden to Iowa's taxpayers. And of course, the governor has the same idea. He says that he won't address the gas tax issue until we've addressed the property tax issue. And I'm comfortable with that. the bottom line is Iowans pay pretty dearly for our state, well, state, county, and local government. And we have to make sure that we've got that under control, or a lot of the concerns that were addressed, that were mentioned here today, simply aren't going to happen. We need to attract business so we have jobs for our children. We have to grow. You know, we went down from 5 congressional districts to 4 in the last redistricting, and we're bleeding. We're losing ground, I think, and so we just need a more attractive tax structure than I think we have now. So I think we have to look at it, and other states are doing this. We have to look at the whole tax picture as a total unit and figure out where we can tweak it to address where we need the extra money, but still not just sending an extra tax bill to the payers, taxpayers.
Well, I have, I'm probably going to dwell maybe a little bit too much on the gas tax thing. I have a friend who thinks that we wouldn't even notice a dime in the gas tax.
Right.
The gas goes up and down. He thinks we need infrastructure critically. I also have other friends that say what's going to happen is we rural folks who have to drive further to work, we're going to pay more gas. We're going to pay more for our gas so that they can then build roads in Des Moines to save, you know, 5 seconds off of a Des Moines commuter's
right,
time to
right.
work. How do you balance that? How do we make sure that if we do spend more, have to spend more on gas, that we know that our roads, not Des Moines and Cedar Rapids and Iowa City, the big cities are going to get
well, and that's those are
and roads and
really fair concerns. In fact, earlier this week, I had a conversation on the phone with a truck driver, or he drove a lot. I don't remember the details of that, but you know, his comment was, forget the $68 a year average that they talk about. For me, and the miles I drive and the gallons I buy, it's going to be a $2,500 additional tax to me. Well, I can't tell that guy he doesn't count and his concerns don't count. So, and that's part of the problem. Those of us in rural counties, Amy mentioned today, you go to Des Moines and we got the nice blue bridges over 235 and they look nice. But that same effort isn't being made in rural Iowa. You go to Iowa City, you know, I've been there to meetings and the nice cobblestone streets leading up to one of the local popular convention areas there. It looks very nice, but I suspect that was a very pricey couple blocks of street, mm-hmm. and that money came from the DOT fund. So the age-old battle, I guess, of rural versus urban, who's got the political power, I certainly hope we can address that.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with State Senator Ken Rosenboom of Oskaloosa. Well, there was a good discussion, too, about the expansion of Medicaid, and Governor Branstad is currently opposed to that, but a lot of Republican governors are changing their minds. And I thought a pretty compelling case was made for Medicaid expansion, in part because people are coming to emergency rooms. You can't turn them away if they don't have insurance. So we're paying for it anyway. Why not pay for it at that lower rate with the support of
Yeah, and there's a lot of valid points. I've got probably as many or more emails on this as any other issue. And I guess this is why this job's so much fun, right? We get to make the tough decisions. I understand that, and I understand it's very easy to say that the government's going to pay 100%, the federal government's going to pay 100% of it the first 3 years, and then on a declining scale down to 90% going forward. And why wouldn't you take the money? I mean, that's a simple, compelling argument, but that's just not the whole story. As you heard today, there's concerns about the federal government keeping their promises. When they're spending $1.40 for every dollar of revenue, that's not sustainable long term. So another concern that I expressed, or a young couple expressed to me, was that people that have paid into the paid their taxes, worked hard all their lives, and now are in nursing homes, and we have we're adding many thousands of younger folks to the Medicaid picture that have absolutely no skin in the game, no copay, no reason for them to, no incentive for them to take care of themselves, because regardless of what happens to me, somebody else is going to pay the medical bills. And those same folks are at the same trough as these older folks that really need this this service and have paid into the system their whole lives and are still paying into it today by way of their Social Security income. It's hard for me to look that person in the eye and say, well, I don't care about that. I won't do that. I think that's a valid concern. So it's a tough issue. Frankly, I don't know if the legislature is going to make any difference on it. As I understand it, it'll take a two-thirds vote in each of the houses to override any decision the governor might make.
You've said that there's going to be a big battle over the budget. The Democrats and the Republicans are very far apart.
Yes.
Are you looking forward to that?
Well, I'm looking forward to it. You know, in one level, another level, I suppose, is not going to be much fun. But this should not be that difficult, Bob. Any one of us that has a family household budget knows you don't spend more than you take in. The Senate Democrats' proposal does precisely that. It spends $200 million more than we're going to take in. They're going to spend $1.05 for every dollar of revenue. That makes no sense. We've been down that road before, and it simply doesn't make sense to do that. So, as Representative Vanderlyn had mentioned, I don't know if they're shooting so high to hope that we'll compromise and meet somewhere in the middle. Well, that's not where the answer lies. The answer lies in spending no more than incoming revenue, just the way we do with our family budgets.
Well, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I read the Democratic proposal, and they're saying it's only 99%. That's not that far apart. That they aren't spending more than they were taking in. And I might be misrepresenting.
Yeah, well, I don't have the numbers with me, but with the Republican House proposal, which was spending 98% of incoming revenue. That still ended up being over 3% growth in the state budget. With an 11% increase in the state government, the math is simple. We're simply spending more than we intend to take in, than we expect, rather, to take in. So without getting lost in all the numbers, it's down to basic budgeting principles, which ones you're going to follow. And we're going to follow the conservative path on that.
Well, you expressed a little bit of a sort of humorous perspective on the fact that you're in the minority, the Republicans are
yes.
in the minority, that you don't have to work very hard or very late, and you come in
yeah.
late. I mean, you were sort of joking.
Yeah, we
that,
were, and Amy and I were, because
Amy Sinclair.
And the fact is, the power structure in Iowa state politics right now is a Republican governor, a Republican House, and a Democrat Senate. That's the people that will have all the negotiations. And what Amy and I were referring to, as Senate Republicans, we're just trying to stay relevant. We're trying to, you know, wave our arms and say, hey, we're here. You know, don't overlook us totally. So, but the reality is we are in the minority, and in that situation, we don't call as many shots as maybe we'd like to.
Isn't there any sort of crossing the aisle and working together on things? I mean, there is a county government, there is a city government. Is there just a big wall?
Well, and that's, you know, the short answer is yes. That seems to be the case. And that's our history. That's our recent history. All the old timers will say it didn't used to be this way, and they're right. I went there with a hope and an intent that we can actually change that, that we can be adults about this and recognize that not one part, not either party has all the answers. I made a strong effort personally to present a unifying comments on a very difficult issue, and that's a matter of abortion and life, the pro-life passion that I have, and I think was able to do that. That seems to be the case. I challenged both sides to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem. I challenged both sides to ask what's right instead of who's right. I challenge both sides to quit using certain issues as political footballs. And I'm a rookie. I don't know how that was received by those that have been around a long time. But for the most part, it appears that that was quite well received. And hopefully that'll lead to better things.
What's your biggest surprise?
I've been asked that a lot. And there aren't a lot of surprises for me because I have spent a lot of over the years, I've been part of this process from the outside, advocating for different things that I was passionate about. But there was one really pleasant surprise for me, and that is the staff, the professional staff that are available to legislators. There is the nonpartisan Legislative Service Agency, the LSA, good professional people that know what they're doing. And then each caucus, for instance, the Republican senators have a staff of people that are each specialized in different areas of state government. And these people are experienced. They know the history of their, you know, for instance, tax. There's a lady, Pam, there that's been there for a long time dealing with tax stuff. And, yes, she's partisan in the sense that she works for the Republican Senate caucus. But she knows history, she knows people, she knows process, and it's really wonderful, especially as a freshman senator, to have the kind of professional help that we have to answer questions. We make the decisions, but we need to know how to access information and that type of thing.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners today?
Well, simply this. You know, we just talked about partisanship, and we talked about can't we find a better way to do this, and I hope we can. But as messy as the process is, as rancorous as it can become at times, there's two things I'd like to say about that. One is a lot of the work is done on a bipartisan way. You just don't hear about those things. And number two, despite its shortcomings and the messiness of the process, sometimes it's still a better system than the world has ever known. And so you can be cynical about it if you like, but in my view, it's still a process that has served us well in the past and I hope will serve us well in the future.
Thanks to Ken Rosenboom for contributing to the program. For KNIA, KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.